From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fifth day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan will stick around this afternoon, at least for me. At about 3 o'clock, I'll record with him along with Chuck Shelby and Wayne Nelson, Commodity Week. You can hear that by 5 o'clock this evening or tomorrow on many of these radio stations right here on Illinois Public News. Medium. A bit later in this program, we'll check the cash grain market, that with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, and a special update from Brazil. Corey Melby, who is located there, a Minnesota farmer who also lives in Brazil, will update us on what conditions are like on the ground for soybeans in that nation on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this fifth day of January. Dan Zwicker of Waco, Texas, and Zwicker Consulting now joins us to talk about the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
We haven't talked, for about 3 weeks, I think, so maybe we better start with where we stand and what's changed since the beginning of the year or since just prior to Christmas, one of the two.
Well, I think the market pretty well finished the year kind of like most holiday markets do. I think we talked maybe a week before Christmas week, and the markets have a tendency to soften, you know, going into Christmas week, and then kind of chop sideways there in the last week of December. So I think, you know, when you look at the monthly charts, lead futures, corn futures ended up closing the month higher. Basically, soybeans basically had a lower close, but a reversal to the downside. Now, this week's action in soybeans is looking like it's going to negate that monthly reversal down we had during the month of December with yesterday's daily reversal to the upside. Now, I know we were down a couple pennies here today, but after a big day there on Wednesday, it's not uncommon to have the market take a breather. The key will probably be whether or not beans can resume the upside and maintain their advance for the week. And then we basically close out the first week of the year with a weekly reversal to the upside. And I always watch the first few days of the month for those kind of reversals, because a daily reversal during the first week of a month, and then that turns into a weekly reversal to the upside or downside, depending, but in this case, it'd be the upside. Then you basically lay the groundwork for a monthly reversal to the upside. And if that does go ahead and materialize, then that would imply that there's some more upside yet in the soybean market. Not necessarily knowing what the fundamentals are going to be, but at least from a technical perspective, the monthly reversal down during December has failed. And when one of those fail, then it usually has a lot of horsepower in going in the opposite direction. In this case, it would be to the upside. Corn had a good day the last couple days. We're basically making new cash highs, Central Illinois, for the past 6 months. When you look at a lead futures chart, the way March corn futures performed yesterday and today, we are basically making new lead futures highs since the market recorded its low last fall, or late summer, early fall, whatever you want to call it. So when you look at, and then same way with wheat is breaking out to the upside of a sideways, long-time sideways trend. So from a technical perspective, you have to kind of put corn in a higher trend. It may be sideways, but it's mostly higher when you look at it on a lead futures basis. Soybeans, it's still basically, I think you want, if we can confirm a weekly reversal to the upside this week, it would put soybeans on solid footing to be in a sideways to higher market as we go into the month of February. And that would be the same case for wheat.
A week from today, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its end of the season or final numbers for the 2016 growing season. World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate out, Crop Production Report out. Do you expect to see any changes?
Well, anytime you get into those yearly reports, you have to be braced for some changes and some surprises. Because that is, the USDA basically comes up with a production number by, you know, backing out of the equation of what September 1st stocks were versus the December 1st stocks, what they think they produced, and then what was used, and then the remainder is, well, then this is probably what our production is, and if this is what our production is, then this is probably what the national average yield is. So, you always get into, you're at least vulnerable to some surprises. With the supply of inventory that we have, it's difficult to see it to be a bullish surprise, but it could be generally supportive or neutral. I mean, I think anything other than bearish is probably a bullish at this point, because I think most of the bearishness of the 2016 crop is priced into the market. And the final crop report, I kind of view as just kind of the final nail in the coffin of the previous year's crop. And then the market then begins to focus on new crop prospects, you know, acreage mixes, what kind of growing season weather we're going to have. And so forth. So that's, you know, other than barring any kind of surprise, I think it won't be really a big event at all. It'll just kind of be the finishing touches of the 16 growing season, which turned out to be phenomenal.
USDA does a lot of surveying for this particular report in the month of December, checking in with farmers to see what their crops really look like. From your discussions with producers across the Midwest, do you think their corn or soybean crops were better or worse than what USDA currently has tabulated for them?
I really don't know. I think there's reason to believe that USDA may be a shade high, but I really, visiting with farmers, I'm not really too sure I could really argue one way or the other. I think some of this later crop did not meet some farmers' expectations. And of course, if you take that it didn't meet farmers' expectations, then maybe some of this USDA yields may have an opportunity to kind of come down a little bit, depending upon what USDA survey did indicate, you know, for this report. So there could be some downward adjustments in that. There could also be some acreage adjustments in harvested acreage. That always seems to kind of come into play in the on the final crop year. But like I said, I don't see how the thing would be a shocker one way or the other. Additional supplies would definitely kind of cast a more negative attitude over the marketplace with our current carryover projections. But anything smaller would be at least constructive, because I think, like I said, all of the bearishness should be pretty well priced into the market by now.
I'll call you in about 40 minutes. We'll talk on Commodity Week. Hey, thanks so much for being with me here on the Closing Market Report.
Very well.
And of course, this is Dan Zwicker with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, senators from the Midwest are meeting today with Scott Pruitt. He's the nominee by the Trump administration to lead EPA. Ethanol proponents have voiced some concern that Pruitt may not be supportive of biofuels. Now, Pruitt currently serves as the Attorney General for Oklahoma, one of the nation's biggest oil, natural gas, and grain-producing states. In 2014, the New York Times reported he and other Republican attorneys general had formed an unprecedented secretive relative alliance with the energy industry. However, Trump's pick for ambassador to China, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, recently said Pruitt would be supportive of biofuels. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley will host the meeting in his office. Senate members joining the meeting include Missouri Republican Roy Blunt, South Dakota Republicans John Thune and Mike Rounds, Iowa Republican Joni Ernst, Kansas Republican Pat Roberts, and Nebraska Republican Deb Fisher. On a similar note, the American Farm Bureau Federation, or AFBF, yesterday said the organization strongly endorses the nomination of Pruitt for EPA Administrator. AFBF's president, Zippy Duvall, calls Pruitt an ideal nominee. Duvall says Farm Bureau support for Pruitt is based on the nominee's respect for the law and his understanding of the need for an agency to live within the statutory programs Congress has authorized. Let's stay for a moment with the president-elect's nominees. This time around, we'll talk about U.S. Trade Representative nominee Robert Lighthizer. He served as a deputy trade representative in the Reagan years and went on to lobby for U.S. steel firms, pressing for punitive measures against foreign steel. Former USDA trade chief in the Clinton administration, Paul Drazik, says Lighthizer is viewed as a forceful personality and one who could centralize the trade function at USTR that Trump's other appointments to Commerce and New Trade Council could complement.
With Lighthizer, you know, I think maybe there's a chance that USTR will be able to continue to play a central role and maybe the central role in determining U.S. trade policy.
President-elect Trump has threatened to heavily tax imports from China and Mexico, two nations that U.S. agriculture relies on for markets. Trump has also threatened to rip up NAFTA, which has largely helped agriculture, but less so, many argue, for manufacturing. And finally today, ChemChina and Syngenta were issued an extension by the European Union antitrust regulators to comply with the regulators' request yesterday. The EU has extended the deadline for a decision on ChemChina's proposed buyout of Swiss group Syngenta by 10 working days to April the 12th. Syngenta said in a statement the two companies had asked for the extension to allow sufficient time for discussion of remedy proposals. The European Commission opened the investigation into state-owned ChemChina's $43 billion bid in October, saying the companies had not alleviated concerns over the deal. Syngenta said in a statement the two companies remain fully committed to the transaction and are confident of its closure. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. As you know, the South American crop is of utmost importance to the marketplace at this point. We do have on the line with us today Corey Melby. He's a Brazilian ag consultant. Comes to us from one of the states in Brazil. Where are you exactly today?
I am in where I live, Goiânia, Goiás, dead center of Brazil, southwest of Brasilia. 2 hours by car.
And so this would be in the midst of primary soybean growing regions?
Yes. From here to the southwest in Goiás is a very prolific soybean area. Obviously, Mato Grosso and Paraná are number one and two, but Goiás is circa number three in Brazil.
We understand that there were some difficulties getting the crop started there. Can you tell me what conditions are like today?
In the northeast quadrant, the sector called Mapitoba, specifically Bahia, Piauí, Maranhão, and eastern Goiás, where I'm at, has had very, very little rain through December. Really, it did not rain at all in December. We did have a shot of rain December 31st. Much below normal. The early soy is really starting to show stress. The later stuff does have a little time yet, but the forecast is dry for another week and then rain. It's really touch and go at the moment how this crop will play out in the northeastern quadrant.
And how far through the production cycle might be the crop?
Everything from flowering to early podding to probably 10-20% now in full pod fill. And that's the stuff being stressed right now. Are there some pods being aborted? There's a lot of leaf curling and wilting going on in these specific areas. Again, we're talking about 10 or 12 million tons of production in that area of a total Brazilian production on top of 100. So again, we're talking about 10% of the country, not 30, 35% like last year at this time.
And if you move into Mato Grosso, some of the primary production areas where the bulk of the soybean crop is raised, have you toured those areas or have any conditions to tell us about?
I was last out there in mid-November, and the conditions were just beyond perfect at that time. Some friends and contacts, clients, are just starting harvesting this week out in Mato Grosso. And they're harvesting the early, the 90-day soy, the stuff that gets cotton and corn planted behind it in January. The yields are coming in just fantastic, 55, 60, even 70 sacks. In other words, 60 bushel per acre, 90-day soybeans. That's 20 sacks above the historical norm for that type of technology. So I'm very optimistic that as we get into the 105, 115, 25-day soy, the yields are only going to go up from where we've started here.
So all in all, despite the dry conditions in your area, it looks like a really good crop for Brazil.
At this point, we're talking about just a little bit of the cream being taken off the top of the top end of this crop. Basically, what the Northeast could potentially lose, let's say, 1 or 2 million tons. Mato Grosso has added that much, probably in the last 30 days. Basically, to date, Mato Grosso is probably being understated to what its production potential probably could be for this year.
Corey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. I look forward to talking with you again sometime in the near future.
Very good. Thanks. Thanks much. Hope all is well. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
You too. That, of course, is Corey Melby. He is an agricultural consultant based in Brazil. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain market. Now Matt Bennett is with us. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom.
Well, we just heard Corey Melby tell us that they had a really good crop coming out of the field, in fact, some of the early stuff in Brazil, parts of Mato Grosso, maybe 25% better than normal. That would be a big jump. What does it mean to you in relationship to what we've seen happen in the soybean market so far this week?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting market. We came in here the first day of the week and we were trading off, whereas corn was having a little better day. And I think a lot of people were saying, well, you know, maybe this is a function of the funds trying to balance up their extremely long bean position and short corn position. And, you know, I think that, you know, essentially that's kind of how we start out the week. And then yesterday we trade some weather. So, you know, yesterday I talked to some of my producers. You know, these guys have been wanting to maybe catch up on some of the sales they didn't get made. You know, they're sitting here telling me, well, you know, I don't want to sell back down towards $9, you know. I said, well, you got a chance at 10 again, at least to lock a few in. We look at these as selling opportunities. They're going to have a big crop one way or the other.
All right. And then on the old crop that you've got in the bin, let's switch gears and go to corn. Are you moving any at this time?
You know, when you're looking at old crop corn, if it's in the bin at home, basis kind of been working for you. I think at some point a guy might step in here and decide, you know, maybe he wants to go ahead and hedge out maybe to the July, or, you know, there's a 13, 14 cent carry out to the July, and then, you know, you got a 20 cent carry out to the set. But, you know, maybe hedge out to the July and then let the basis work for you. But if you want to get the corn out of the bin, like a lot of guys do, and get the money in hand, you know, it's probably a decent idea to go ahead and sell some corn and then re-own it with, you know, a call spread. I'm probably going to do it out to the September so I can get through pollination, but you can do it through the July and maybe save a little bit of money.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Normally, we're joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. He's still on holiday this week. I have an update, though, of the growing region's weather across the planet. Let's start in South America. Mato Grosso is the largest soybean-producing state in the nation of Brazil. This week, they have been getting a bit of rainfall, though it's warm there. Temperatures today, 94 degrees, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they're a bit warmer, 100 on Friday, 99 Saturday. Sunny on Sunday and 96, and rainfall on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They'll all be in the upper 90s. The lows are back down in the low 70s, so a 30-degree swing in their temperature shouldn't be terribly bad. Mato Grosso do Sul in Brazil will also be warm. Saturday, 100 degrees for the high, the low at 71, though they're expecting some rainfall on all the days except for Monday. It will be sunny on that day. A high of 100 degrees in Mato Grosso. Weather in Goiás, Brazil, warm as well, though not quite so warm. The high in the upper 80s, low 90s today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. Their lows are in the mid-60s in Goiás. Paraguay will be one of the warmest places, especially starting Sunday of this coming week. 110 degrees on Sunday. That's right, 110 degrees Fahrenheit. But that's not the top temperature, 113 degrees on Wednesday of next week, and they'll have sunshine on that day. And their lows are in the upper 70s and low 80s for the overnight. In Argentina, Cordoba, warm, 96 today, and then Friday, 100 degrees on Saturday, 99 on Sunday, 102 on Monday. Although they will get some sporadic rainfall over that time frame. Again, about a 30-degree swing from their high to their low, so their overnight temperatures in the upper 60s to low 70s. And that's a look at the weather in South America. Here in North America, much colder, of course, as we're suffering through the winter months in January. Iowa will have about 17 on Friday for their high. In Illinois, around 15 degrees. Nebraska, a 20-degree high. Minnesota is where it'll be cold today. It's just 1 degree there. They'll have a 7-below temperature tonight, by the way, in Minnesota. They'll top out at 12 tomorrow, 11 on Saturday, and then they'll be tending to go a bit warmer. By the time we get to next Thursday, a week from today, they should be about 28 degrees in Minnesota with a low of 4 in their overnights. That's a look at the weather forecast for some of the growing regions around the planet. You can always check out our weather right there on our website, willag.org, willag.org. Look for the link for CMR Weather. Speaking of links, you'll also find a link there to Commodity Week. We'll record that in about 20 minutes here at Illinois Public Media. Our guests this week include Dan Zwicker, along with Chuck Shelby and Wayne Nelson. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in agriculture. We'll post it to the website by about 5 o'clock tonight. You'll hear it on many of these radio stations tomorrow and over the weekend. For Yule by Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.